Welcome to the Authentically American Podcast, featuring inspiring stories from great Americans who are making a difference. Your host is West Point grad, former Army Ranger, and founder of Authentically American, Dean Wegner.
Welcome to the Authentically American Podcast. I'm your host, Dean Wegner. Today I'm joined by a good friend of mine and a great American, PGA Tour golf professional, Ben Crane. Ben turned pro all the way back in 1999 and has since won 8 professional tournaments. Ben is a man of strong faith and commitment to family. I really enjoyed hearing his story of hard work and dedication to his craft, but even more so the story of his time as an international music video sensation when he started the Golf Boys. You don't want to miss out on today's episode with Ben Crane. Well, Ben, welcome to the Authentically American Podcast, and thanks so much for investing some time with us today.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's, you know, we haven't known each other too long, but have enjoyed getting to know you and your family and consider you just a friend and an inspiration for all of us. So thanks again for being here. And you know, when we've done these, one of the things I really like to do is almost go back to the beginning and see where a lot of those early, you know, childhood experiences start to shape, you know, the future of a lot of our guests. So it was interesting to read a little bit more about you and knowing that your golf career started at the young age of 5.
Yeah.
And your grandfather. So tell us a little more about that.
Yeah, I was a kid who loved sports, and I wanted to be a professional athlete. I saw my dad going to and from work, and I thought, man, that looks rough.
It's like work.
Yeah. And I love sports, and I got a lot of affirmation because I was decent at sports as a kid. And by the time I was 5 years old, I started to pick up the game of golf because my grandfather liked to play and I loved my grandfather. And so I played all sports really for the next 5 or 6 years, and but really started to realize I was best at golf. And and so by the time I was 14, I quit all other sports because I thought, you know, I might have a chance. I'm like, well, NBA, I'm limited. I'm going to be about, you know, 10 inches too short. Football, I'm not big enough. And so I started going through the sports that I love. And I love golf because you can practice by yourself. You don't need a whole team to do it. And my grandpa loved golf. And I loved my grandpa. I wanted to hang out with my grandpa. And so he had this group of old cronies. And he had these 3 guys he played with on Thursdays and Saturdays. And they would play for a dime a hole and double or nothing on 18. And every once in a while, one of those guys was out of town, and I got the slot, and I got to play with them, and which was just a thrill. I mean, they just had a routine, you know.
Oh yeah.
But finally, one of those old guys died for me, and I got in there, and so I got the Thursday
permanent slot.
That's right. I got the Thursday Saturday slot, and I just fell in love with the game and started to excel, you know, a slow progression of great coaching and all that along the way. It's been a fun ride.
Well, that's a testament to your grandfather and his cronies as well, because here's this young kid come along and, you know, upsetting the routine. So they were all good with you joining that foursome as well.
Yeah, and I mean, big money. So dime a hole, double or nothing on 18. So you got the 18, you'd worked all day, you know, and you're up 30 cents and you're like, oh my gosh, I got to let it all ride right here. So we had some fun.
So did you win some money or did they make you pay up?
I won some money. I think I was up lifetime on the deal. They were obviously a little too generous with me. But when we cleaned out my grandpa's locker after he passed, we went to his locker and he must have had about $300 in there and just change and, you know, $1 bills and stuff, whatever, that he'd always, you know, that was his little bank. And it was fun. We got to donate that to a fun charity.
Oh, that is fun. So it's just interesting and neat to hear those stories when it ties back to your grandfather and investing that time and where it all took shape. So it sounds like early on you started to figure out that you had some game that had some potential. So when did that really start to come into focus, say, you know what, there's a potential to pursue a career and not have the more traditional work experience that your dad had?
Yeah, so it was really, when I was a kid, you know, I realized that I was probably the best golfer of my 5-6 friends, you know. Mm-hmm. And then there's, like, you start to get into state competitions and national competitions, and you're like, I'm better than most of these guys, and if I really, you know, dedicate myself to it. And so I made a commitment early on. I heard my my coach when I was about 15 years old say, you know, I think if I'd worked a little harder, I could have made it on the PGA Tour. Mm. I thought to myself, I'll never say that.
Yeah.
I will always work as hard as I possibly can, so that that won't be the reason I didn't make it. I'll have looked back and I'll be able to say, effort was there, it just wasn't God's plan. And so I just dedicated myself. There was one time in early on, late high school, early college, where I saw a kid who I thought was outworking me, and that didn't last long. I'm like, I'm going to outwork him. And so that was really kind of a commitment I made to myself, and then blessed with good coaching along the way. Yeah. And college, I got to University of Oregon, and I was, you know, the top five guys on a college golf team travel. And mm-hmm. and so, you know, you go to Hawaii, and okay. when it's wintertime in Oregon, you want to make that trip. you go all over the country playing these college tournaments. Mm-hmm. And so I was the fifth guy. So I barely made the traveling team. By the time I was a sophomore, I was the number one player. So I'd had a big jump there. Yeah, and I'd had some great coaching that had showed me some fundamentals of how to practice, and mm-hmm. I was able to continue to get better. And then all of a sudden, I started to look at myself, compare myself to the best players in college golf, and I felt like there's path there.
Oh, yeah. Well, one of the things I was going to ask about, because Oregon, we have cousins that live there, and we just love visiting, but I don't think of that as traditional great golf weather.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a shorter summer, warmer period, and then there's a lot of, you know, moisture in the air, so
yeah,
how'd you balance that with trying to get all the practice and getting the play in?
Yeah, it's I mean, the summertime is incredible. It's 80 degrees,
gorgeous.
No humidity. Mm-hmm. It's maybe the best place on earth, you know, for about mm-hmm. 3 months a year. But yeah, I had to play in terrible weather. I had to enjoy the rain, and I enjoyed the rain because most of the time when it was raining, other people stayed away from the golf course. So I could play from the 6th tee to the 8th green, and, you know, I could play cross-country golf and all that. So I had to just – there was a couple years there where I was like, I'm going to play every day this year, no matter what it's like. Uh-huh. And so I played in some snow. I played in a bunch of ice. Uh-huh. I played in all sorts of rain and wind and all that. You know, trees are falling down. I'm like, I'm playing every day this year.
Do you think that environment may have helped you, just thinking back? If you're playing in Florida and you're, you know, sunny year-round, you don't have that inclement weather, don't have those challenges?
Yeah, I mean, I've become a little more of a fair-weather golfer these days. But certainly, I think it developed some toughness. And Jack Nicklaus, the greatest player of all time, used to say, I'd get to a tournament and I'd just pray for bad weather. Because I knew if the weather got bad, you know, about a third of the field would just kind of would just drop off.
I've not heard that before about Jack, but it makes sense because guys starts to separate who's really focused and who's got the commitment.
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting. So I know one of my guests last month was David Akers. I don't know if you'd know David. He's a, you know, NFL kicker. He's going to be a future Hall of Famer. But he talked a lot about the mental aspects of kicking. Mm-hmm. And then I think about golf. I mean, it takes it to a whole new level. There's obviously the physical side, but then there's the whole mental side. So talk to me about that, because I've often struggled with my own game, and I have nowhere near the ability you have, but, you know, there's amazing. Some days I go out, and everything's clicking, and then it's just mental the next time.
Yeah. Yeah, it's certainly one of the hardest sports I've found mentally, and I've had plenty of challenges. I think being a field goal kicker in the NFL – I think tennis mm-hmm. and golf are right up there as, and pitching. Baseball pitching is such a difficult thing mentally to be able to steady your mind for a long period of time and not think about the result, but to be able to just relax in the moment, do your best, and calm your mind. For golf, it's you have to initiate motion, right? And mm-hmm. so it's not reactive, and so it can be very challenging. And so I've worked with a couple of mental guys over the years. A guy named Lanny Basham was an Olympic rifle shooter. And he figured out, he went to the Olympics and choked his guts out and dedicated the next 4 years of his life trying to figure out, how do I not choke my guts out? And so he came up with this system, and it's brilliant, really. It's to have a routine. But then after every shot, I think his secret sauce was, after every shot he would shoot, he would imagine, okay, if it was a perfect shot, great, I'll remember that. But if it wasn't a perfect shot, you'll make the correction. Like, if I had done that shot perfectly, I would have shot it this way. And so the last thing that go across your mind is that perfect fluid motion, you know, for golf. So it's we call it the reload. And so it's like, okay, that shot went off, you know, to the right, you know, whatever. But if I'd hit that shot perfectly, I would have released a little better and I would have felt nice and relaxed and released, you know, through the motion. And so it keeps your mental game a little more stable and you're thinking about solutions as opposed to problems. And so that's one of the things I've learned over the years that's really helped me.
So is that a recent coaching that you received, or was that something very early on?
No, that was something fairly early on in my professional career.
Got it.
Yeah.
Because I remember one of my few experiences to relate to the pressure that you had. This was a member guest tournament, and I played probably the best round I've ever had. I shot a 74, which for me was phenomenal. And they had a horse race after, so there were pairings that went off, and you know, the few hundred golfers that were there were all lined up, and I was hitting it down the middle all day long. And there on the first tee, what did I do? You know, hooked it right out of bounds. So there's the mental game. So I wish I would have had some of that.
Right. Think about all those good shots before you let that one go. And it's hard not to let your mind get in the way. And sometimes it does. I've learned recently this: you have to have grace, you know, for yourself.
Yeah.
Because I can be my own worst critic, and if you hold on to that, trying to, you know, be too hard on yourself, obviously it's detrimental to your performance, but also to your life.
Oh, yeah. So I know, Ben, you've had 8 professional wins and probably countless, you know, leading up in the youth days and through college. Is there one win that sticks out that says, okay, this is the one I just want rolling through my head all the time? Just
I think that it's interesting to think about. I have a golf studio in my house that you've seen that put up the PGA Tour sends you these pictures of you holding the trophy or you playing that last round, whatever. And I think about winning from time to time, but I also don't know if it's the best thing is to think about winning, because in golf, you know, there's 156 guys that play every week and 155 losers. And it's a very hard thing to do. And winning is like one of those things where if you set out to do it, you don't do it. It's kind of like winning gets in the way, I think, of a lot of great preparation. And, you know, in golf, I think it's always a surprise, unless your name's Tiger Woods. And so I think it's, for me, I try not to focus on the wins as much as I'm grateful for them. Mm-hmm. And I'm thankful that God has given me the ability and that I was able to do that. But recently I've just been thinking, you know, I want to work hard in this moment and let the winning kind of take care of itself.
Yeah, so it's an interesting perspective, because you're right. There's a large field that starts out every Thursday, but there's only one person on Sunday that's raising that trophy.
And it's hard because that's the only person we're really focused on. If you watch golf on TV, all that you're watching is they're just only filming the people who have an outside chance or a chance, right? And you just keep whittling it down to you're only watching that one guy who's playing the best he can play. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got some great breaks and it's all come together that week. He's made some incredible putts, you know, some saves, it's just that special week. You know, so I've played maybe 500 tournaments and on PGA Tour and I've won 6 times. You know, and I've had a great career, you know, it's just a lot of losing.
Like you said, just winning one, you know, in and of itself, let alone 6 times.
Right.
I mean, that's incredible.
Yeah.
So tell us about that first one, Ben, the one that, you know, finally broke through, because that's oftentimes I've heard the toughest one to say, okay, I can do this.
Yeah. Yeah. People always ask me in college and, you know, now that I've been a pro for a while, when did you know you were good enough? And I'm like, the day I made it. You don't really know. Uh-huh. And that's the way my first win was. It was a complete surprise. Mm-hmm. I made the cut by 1. I was in Atlanta.
Oh, wow.
And I was just thankful to have made the cut. And I get to Saturday, and I go out and start holing a bunch of putts, and I end up shooting 64. And I'm just like, wow. That's such a special day. And I mean, never really dreamed I was going to be winning the tournament. It was my second year on tour. And it was interesting because the week before that was the Players' Championship. And the Players' Championship is one of the hardest golf courses you'll ever play. And the finish is daunting. You know, the island green and all the water on 16, 17, and 18. And it's just mentally about as hard as golf gets because there's so much fear that can rise up. And the week before I won for the first time, the fear rose up and just crushed me. And I was so just like debilitated by the fear. And I didn't know what to do. And I called my friend Stuart Sink, who is a player on the PGA Tour and a good friend. And I just shared with him how I was struggling. And he just built into me that just courage and not to focus on the result, but just continue to work in the process. And just encouraged me that he too has experienced that many times. And it was like, I just felt my heart just kind of settle. And so I shoot 60 for the third round the next week at TPC Sawgrass or TPC Sugarloaf in Atlanta. And who do I get paired with on the final day but Stuart Sink?
Oh, wow.
And so we're walking the fairways and I start playing really well. And I remember him coming over and patting me on the back going, "Buddy, I'm with you. Keep going." Mm-hmm. You know, it's just so encouraging to be with my friend like that for my first win. And I end up shooting, I end up getting the last hole. I've got a 2-shot lead. I hit a 357-yard drive just with adrenaline down and over this hill that you don't think you can get over.
Oh, yeah.
And I hit a 7-iron on the green, par 5, and I make the putt for eagle to win by 4. And I'm like, what just happened? So that was a thrilling moment. And Heather and I had just gotten married and just celebrating with her. It was just a big surprise.
Magic year two as well.
Yeah.
Stuart sounds like a great friend, and just to think God's plan and his sense of humor to say, okay, he puts him in your life and then there he celebrates it with you.
Yeah. It was sweet. Really sweet.
Special.
Yeah.
So then that was 15 years ago, that first win.
Mm-hmm.
So you've had a long 17-year career, and it seems like every year they're talking about the new young golfers. This new wave comes up, and here you are still competing. So what's the key 17 years later to allow you to continue to compete?
I think the number one thing is just desire. You know, I really do enjoy it, and I try to reevaluate almost every year with a team meeting of the team of people that help me with my game. I think it's right now it's just desire. I really, really enjoy doing it. I enjoy the work. I enjoy the practice. I'm constantly thinking about it. Right now I'm in the process of whiteboarding for my 2020 season. We're in a 6-week break right now. So I'll get with my coaches and whiteboard out every part of my game, all the stats. And I just enjoy that. I enjoy digging in and I enjoy growth. My dad's taught me over the last few years, Jesus was never defensive. And so I'm trying to put that into my own life and allow people to give me constructive criticism.
Right.
And so through my coaches and through my caddy, through my wife, you know, like, hey, what are the things you're seeing that, you know, we feel like I could prune or an area I could grow in? And I think that's served me well over the years.
Yeah. So it's a similar process every year. You sit down with the group that helps you and map it all out?
Yeah, it's actually, it has been a similar process. It kind of turns into a golf plan and a life plan. And we definitely break down the different areas of the game. And then through a putting plan. And it's you know, everything from my little setup checks I'm going to do every day to different distances I'm going to practice, different breaks I'm going to practice. We break down how well I'm reading greens, and we test that through walking and looking at a green and looking at putts and how well I'm seeing them versus feeling them with my feet. So we break down the game into all these different areas, and then we come up with a plan of how to improve. And then we write it down, and then I have some accountability within the goals that we set out for. And I love that. I love having a task and being able to accomplish it. And really the fun thing is that we start out playing a game. Right now we do we're working on some short putting drills. And so we put 4 balls at 3 feet, 3 balls at 5 feet, and 3 balls at 7 feet, and all around the hole. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to get 9 out of 10. So if you're 90% in that range, then your stats on the PGA Tour, you'll be in the top basically 20 in short putting.
Oh, wow.
So we try to take all the information, all the stats, and then develop it into a game, and then play the game, see how I do, and then do some productive practice, and then come back, and hopefully my scores are getting better and we're working on the right thing. So that's one area, one little window into how we're, you know, working at the game to try to improve and get better and sit down with the coaches and develop a plan.
I love the intentional plan, because if you're in the top 20 in putting, and that's assuming the rest of your game, then that's going to be a big indicator in that you're, you know, on that leaderboard heading into Sunday.
That's right. We love those KPIs, those key performance indicators that are going to help you, you know, excel and translate to good scores and good tournaments.
Yeah. Well, Ben, I think back to the last time our families got together and grabbed dinner. And I think a lot of people, when they think of the life of a professional golfer, oftentimes what they may catch on Sunday, or they catch the weekend golf. And, you know, I had an idea, but I never really had an idea what a grind it is when you're in the middle of the season. So, you know, share with everyone a little bit what it's like when you've got X number of tournaments in a row and there's, you know, not a lot of time for fam and you're traveling from one city. So just give a little glimpse into what that is like, because I had no idea. You know, what a grind it is for you.
Yeah, so it's each tournament is a week long, and generally you play 2 to 3 tournaments in a row. And so with 4 kids at home and trying to be intentional with parenting them and growing them, it's you just have to, you know, FaceTime. You have to take out every opportunity you get. I try to write my kids letters from the road. Yeah. Then when I'm home, I try to just be intentional about making them breakfast, tucking them in at night, because I'm not around all the time. And so, you know, our kids are 13, 11, 9 or 8, and then a newborn. So we're as you know, we're in the thick of it. And, and your daughter has been a great blessing to us and helping us with the baby. And, so it's difficult to be on the road. It's the hardest part about my job is you know, packing up my suitcase. I love my wife. I love my kids, and leaving them and the family is running so well. And then you know, the kids are asking, how long you be gone? Why are you leaving? You know, and then when you get into that rental house or that hotel room and the door shuts and you're like, it's just me.
Yeah.
It's pretty lonely. It's, a lot of times I'll stay with my caddy, who's a good friend, who's been with me 10 years.
Oh, wow.
It can be very lonely. It's like, okay, just put one foot in front of the other, just unpack, you know, okay, make out your plan for tomorrow. What time we get to the course? What time are we doing workouts? What time are we, you know, setting our practice round, you know, on, and then once the tournament starts, it's awesome and a thrill. Uh-huh. But those few days of leaving home at first are difficult, but it does make it sweet when you walk in that door and your kids run.
Come
and
racing up to you.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting.
So you said it's a week long. So what's that typical schedule? So do you arrive at a tournament on Monday then, or Tuesday? Or?
Yeah, Monday. So I always try to get to the tournament on Monday. Some guys come in Tuesday, but Jim Furyk, a friend of mine, said he always came in on Monday, and he felt like that really helped him get acclimated to the speed of the greens, do some chipping and putting, and get situated in your house or hotel. And so, yeah, arrive on Monday, you know, get your courtesy car, get yourself set up, go to the grocery store. My caddy and I will go to Whole Foods, and we kind of have our list of things, and we try to cook for ourselves a fair bit, try to eat as healthy as we can, and make ourselves breakfast. And so, yeah, we just kind of get set up and then do a little short game practice. Tuesday's the big day for practice round, and maybe talk to your coaches to make sure everything's in good form. And then Wednesday is the Pro-Am, where you're playing with 3 or 4 other amateurs. So you're playing 18 holes on the course.
Those are always pretty much mandatory as well, right?
Mandatory, yep. Yeah. So if we don't have sponsors and we don't take care of our sponsors, the tournaments don't go. If tournaments don't go, we don't play golf for money. So, so yeah, a lot of guys will say that Wednesday is the biggest day of the week. So met a lot of just incredible people on those Wednesdays and had a lot of fun over the years. They really look forward to that day.
Oh yeah.
And then Thursday, Friday is the first two rounds, and you get one early time and one late time. So you're either going late early or early late. Mm-hmm. And everyone likes late early because you kind of, you know, get to sleep in Thursday, you know, play, you're tired. You generally come home, get some good sleep, and then go back out the next morning when the wind's down and have your best round. But you're 50-50. So you get half and half for the year. And then obviously if you're in the top half, roughly it's 65 or 70 guys that make the cut. So about half the field. And then they play the weekend for the money. And yeah, the goal is really, my wife and I say that top 25s mean that you're close.
Oh, yeah.
Top 10s are, that was a special week. And, that's kind of how we judge it. Making the cut and finishing, you know, kind of towards the bottom is a little discouraging. But making the cut is also like it gives you four rounds to kind of evaluate where you're at with your game. So certainly always good to make the cut.
Oh, absolutely. And then you finish Sunday and then on to the next tournament.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it depends if most of the time you're getting on a plane and going to the next rental house and getting set up. Sometimes if it's convenient, I'll make it home for the night. And that's just like a reset button. So nice just to see the kids, even if it's when they're sleeping, and sleep in your own bed and get back after it.
Well, Ben, what an incredible career you've had, but it's funny as I've learned more about you. Let's shift gears a little bit to the, you know, fun side of you, because this goes all the way back, I forget what year, but the Golf Boys.
Yeah.
That just started. So if golf ever doesn't work out, there could be another
career
for you. But tell me about that whole thing started, and it's amazing. When I looked on YouTube, there's over 8 million views.
Yeah, crazy.
For that video. It's crazy. So tell the story how that all came about.
So I had a friend who was having his 50th birthday, and he has a lot of famous friends, and he owns Discovery Land Company. And so he asked me, or his staff said, would you mind making a one-minute video of what Mike means to you? And I'm like, sure. I'm like, just out of curiosity, who else is making this video for Mike's birthday? And they're like, oh, you know, George Clooney and, you know, Randy Gerber and Cindy Crawford and, you know, like starts naming off all these, Jerry Weintraub, have all these celebrities. And I'm like, and me? I'm like, I got nothing. And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, okay. I'm like, so I sit down in front of the camera and I start talking about my friend Mike. And I watch it back and I'm like, that's certifiably the most boring thing I've ever seen in my life. And I'm like, I got to do something else.
So, set up a little bit,
yeah, right? I got to do something else. So my friend was over and we were shooting a video for a charity that we're involved in. And I said, hey, Sam, I need a fun video to send in for my friend's birthday. And he's like, what are you thinking about? And I'm like, I don't know. What do you think about like doing a dance video? And he's like, listen, if there's a line, he's like, you can't just like dabble around the line. You got to jump way over the line. You got to commit if you're going to go for like a dance video. So we end up doing this. Like, I put on the silliest outfit we can find, and we do this dance video for my friend Mike's birthday, and we send it in, and they say they love it. We get to the party, and they not only show it, but they show it at the beginning, in the middle, and at the end. They kind of splice it up. Then they have me jump out of the cake, and I start doing this dance, and we're like, and George Clooney comes up to me and says, that was one of the best things I've ever seen. I'm like, can we get a picture here?
That's right. You know,
like George and I, we're boys.
Yeah.
And so that is how the video started. My friends saw this video and they're like, is this the craziest thing you've ever done? I'm like, no, I'm, well, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so they're like, you got to do more of this. And I'm like, okay.
Wow.
So Ricky Fowler and Bubba Watson, Hunter Mahan, they all saw that video and said, hey, let's do a video. And I'm like, hey, let's just all do one together. Let's be the Golf Boys. And like, we need a song. We need we need outfits. We need like, and so we just kind of literally started in my garage and grabbed some outfits from Goodwill and had my friend Sam write us a song. And then we just kind of went from there, and it just had a life of its own.
Because for those who have not seen, you definitely jumped in the deep end.
That's right. We were not hanging around the line. We jumped way over the line.
That is phenomenal. So that was one thing I was going to ask about as well, because, man, those are some crazy costumes. So yours had the red suit and the helmet and the pink socks. So how did that outfit come about?
Yeah, it was like on sale at Goodwill for like $5. It's just like old wetsuit onesie, you know, with a helmet. And, yeah, it was just like, no one can take me seriously in this thing. Let's go with this. I don't even know what it is, but it just. And then the other guys, you know, were wearing fur coats and, you know, overalls. It was just, yeah, we just kind of threw it together at Goodwill.
Did you have a costume person, or was this just everybody kind of having some fun?
Yeah, we just got a bunch of silly clothes and just kind of went with it.
I think that made it even better.
Yeah.
Did you have any idea?
No,
we
had no idea. At one point, someone told me that I was the second most downloaded athlete beside LeBron James because these videos had just gone into the golf world and people loved them and they were fun. And we didn't realize what we were doing. We had no idea. We went to the U.S. Open at Congressional. I don't know what year, let's call it 2006, maybe eight, maybe after that. But we go to the U.S. Open and we tell the Golf Channel, hey, we have something for you. Mm-hmm. And they're like, what is it? We're like, well, it's a video. We kind of want to surprise you. And they're like, okay, why don't you guys come on the set Wednesday night before the U.S. Open starts Thursday, and you guys can show the video. And we're like, oh, yeah, this will be great. You know, so we kind of huddle up. You know, we're like, let's do this, you know. And we're all on the golf studio set, and the announcers watch it live as they play it Wednesday night before the U.S. Open. And they're all like stunned.
Like, what in the world?
what was that? What happened? You guys are golfers. That was, I don't know if that was, I don't know if that was good or weird or like, what is that? And the next day we get out to the U.S. Open. We're playing. Golf's a quiet sport. If there's a good shot, whatever. And we start hearing, ooda lolly lolly. We start hearing all the lines from the video. Like, while we're playing, we're like, oh no, what did we do? We all played bad. We're like, we can't keep doing this. Okay, let's do one more. That was fun.
It's almost Happy Gilmore-esque here, because you've got a game that is so much about, you know, tradition and respect and, you know, professionalism, and then just kind of out of character.
Yeah, exactly. It was, we didn't know what we were doing, but we had fun with it, and yeah.
Any plans for the future? Is this kind of on the back burner for now?
I think it's on the back burner. I think the band's split up right now. Everyone's kind of going their own direction. It'd be fun to do another one, but I don't know. It takes 2 to 3 days to do it.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of planning. You know, it's a whole crew of people and a lot of editing, a lot of auto-tune, a lot of bad voices. We did one live performance at Bubba's Bash, and it was so bad. I wanted to quit in the middle of the song. We're like, we are so certifiably bad. Like, our voices are so bad. You know, the auto-tune.
Editing
is amazing. Yeah. I have mad respect for people in editing, because they make something not so good turn.
Maybe sometime in the future, and we look forward to a reunion tour.
Yeah, exactly.
Getting the band back together.
Yeah. There will be no live performances.
Well, let me shift gears, Ben, because you mentioned how important family is to you, and you love your wife, Heather, and you love your kids, and I know we were able to participate in your adoption journey, so tell me about that decision and what that's been like for your family.
Yeah, when we first moved to town from Dallas, we got to know your family, and you guys have adopted, and that was something inspiring to us. And it's always kind of been on our heart. We had three of our own, and we were kind of, we had a couple of failed adoptions, and we'd fostered a couple of kids. And so we were going down the path and presented our adoption book to an adoption attorney down in Florida. And she said she thought she had something for us, and she told us about the situation. It sounded good. It was a Jamaican dad and a Bahamian mom. They weren't together, but the mom was already overwhelmed with two of her kids. And so she picked us. And then there was that time where we were trying to figure out if we were going to say our final yes. And that's when we called you guys. And because it was very similar with ages of that you guys adopted and we adopted. And so we're just like, what has your journey been like? We had a wonderful time with you guys that really blessed us and encouraged us. And that really propelled us to moving forward with the adoption. It's scary to jump backwards, you know, 9 years in your life. Crossing racial, the racial barrier, and it's just a bunch of unknown. And so to hear you guys and to hear your kids say, I can't imagine life without Escal. I can't imagine, you know, us not experiencing the blessing of him being in our family. And since, so we adopted Crew and he's now 5 months old. And he's the greatest blessing, greatest thing we've ever done as a family. It's been so much fun. Our kids have all thrived because of it. They all want to be home more. And his adoption, and because of his color, reminds me of my adoption from the Lord. And what did I do to earn my adoption from the Lord? Nothing. It's grace.
Grace, yeah.
And so that just blesses me so much. And we have just had such a sweet journey. It's brought my wife and I closer. It's brought our whole family closer. And so we are just thrilled to have Crew. And we all, you know, this morning I made breakfast for the kids and I took Crew. I fed him, tried to let Heather sleep for one morning as he's just starting to sleep through the night. So I get him up. I feed Crew, and then I take Crew up to wake up the other kids. And the other kids, when I wake them up, are like, you know, like, leave me alone, whatever. But when I set Crew down next to the kids, and they're just like, hey, buddy! You know, they're just getting, all of a sudden, they're like instantly awake. They're so excited to see him. And just, you know, his smile just warms our hearts. So it's been a sweet, sweet journey. And we're grateful for you guys for being a blessing and showing us the way and encouraging us in that way as well.
I just love hearing the story because, I mean, literally your life's been turned upside down, but, you know, really in a profound, amazing way.
Yeah.
And I think most people, Ben, don't realize, you know, that there's so many orphans, that there's 150 million orphans, and wish I could adopt them all but one.
Yeah. That's and it's, I think there was a stat recently, you know, Tennessee is taking this initiative, a lot through Tennessee Kids Belong to get all the kids that are available to be adopted in Tennessee, to get them adopted. And one of the ways our church is doing that, and one of the ways that's happening is through some media crews spending time with the kids, making a video and just them sharing their lives and then them putting those videos online so people can get to know those kids and potentially adopt those kids. And we're having a 50% conversion rate right now, which has been really exciting. And Angel Armies, Chris Tomlin's organization, is doing a great work in that as well. So that's been sweet to see. And so that's really something that, you know, Tennessee is one of the most adoptive states in the country. And, you know, you go to church around here and you see a lot of color, a lot of biracial families. And it's so encouraging. I mean, it's what amazing. Heaven's going to look like, right? I mean, it's just going to be such a great collection of all of us with the Lord. So, yeah, it's been a great blessing to us.
Awesome. And we've been thankful to be a part of that journey and watch Crew and just your whole family light up when they talk about them.
Yeah.
It's been amazing. So, did have one more question, and I'd like to ask all of our guests, and this is really the only one I ask about our company, but I always like to get the perspective on what it means to you, Ben, to be authentically American.
I mean, it's a privilege, right? It's what did I do to earn, you know, being American? It's such a gift, right? And I believe because I am American, you know, because I've been born into this country, into this family. Why did it happen? And it's so that I could be a blessing to others. Mm-hmm. And so, and I believe that's what you guys are doing, is being a blessing to others, being a blessing to the people in our country, you know, keeping the jobs here. And it's awesome to see because, you know, how many Americans these days are willing to work? It seems like it's something that has been a challenge in this country because there has been so much prosperity. But I would say at the end of the day, it's a gift. It's a blessing so that we can be a blessing to others. And that's what you guys are doing to this country through what y'all are doing. So it's exciting to see.
Despite all the divisiveness and, you know, polarizing world we live in, I mean, it's an amazing country.
Yeah.
We live in that we're both blessed to call home.
Yep. Amen.
Well, Ben, thank you for spending so much time with us here. And I do have two gifts for you.
All right.
You know, you being a great American patriot, you know, I had two of them. So one, I know you make a fashion statement that's a bold American. So socks,
those are
often fun and trendy. So
strong.
These are Carolina cotton, knit in Carolina. And this is a great representation of product for us, Ben, because when you feel them here, you'll feel how soft and comfortable. But when you wear them, not only do they have a fun, innovative design and a creative, patriotic design, but you'll pull them up once at the end of the day. They don't fall down. They don't sag. They're just a better product, which is what Made in USA should be.
I love it. I love it. These are definitely in the lineup right here. Right. I love these. Those are awesome.
Go with your outfit right now.
100%. 100%.
And the other one, Ben, I know fitness, and that's part of the reason you've been able to stay so competitive for 17 years is, you know, staying active, staying fit, and staying healthy. And we have a new technology. I don't know if you've ever seen sweat-activated printing, what we call our sweat ink. So this is a, you know, if you feel the T-shirt, it's just a great design. I mean, it's great. It's soft. Obviously, Made in USA, it's tagless. But you know, if you hold that side up for me, you know, this is the Freedom design, and this is the, you know, innovative technology. So this is sweat-activated. So the next time you work out, wear this, and you'll see what happens. We're going to cheat here, but we'll spray it. So when you sweat, you
know, oh, that's cool.
And people have been blown away by this technology, and it's out there. I just like to say we do it better than everybody. So we've got, you know, Predators. We've got some merchandise there. We've got different schools, but this was just another fun way to give you a gift and be part of what we're doing.
Love it. Thank you, Dean. Appreciate it. Look forward to wearing that.
You've been listening to the Authentically American podcast. You can follow Authentically American on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, and find all our episodes at authenticallyamerican.us/podcast. If you haven't yet, go to Apple Podcasts to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Thank you for listening.